Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Small Council Radio. This is a show where we talk about just about anything and everything, A Song of Ice and Fire by Simon, the miniature game, and tonight we will be talking about the Ohio tournament that happened over the weekend. Tonight we have with us Brett, as well as first, second, and third place. For that event, I believe there was a total of 20 participants. Is that correct, Brett?
Yes, that's correct. 20 participants.
Awesome. And then we also have all the stats pulled up. Tonight we're going to be going over a little bit of all of their lists and kind of talking about, what they kind of faced throughout the day. And pointing out maybe some of the, some of the stats that we might not have been expecting, because there's definitely some on here that I never would have guessed. For those that want to kind of follow along, if you go to asongoficeandfirestats.com, you can create a profile, go to tournaments, go under Winter is Coming. It should be in the completed section of tournaments, and it'll show you a huge graph of all the different like stats between commanders, factions, and kind of the percentage, win-loss percentage, and all that good stuff. So definitely go check that out if you want to kind of follow along, and you can even check out other tournaments to kind of see how things are tracking, and you can kind of look at all the factions and commanders on a whole to see how they've been doing. Based on everyone's input. So tonight, like I said, we have with us first place, which was our host, Brett, and we also have on second and third place. Thank you guys for coming on tonight. And
thanks,
Brett,
for having us.
Because you had the chance to meet these guys in person, I'm going to let you introduce them for us.
Oh, sure, of course. So the second place winner, this is a gentleman I actually faced in Indy, which not going to go too much back into what happened at that Indy tournament, but just for the record, this is Murray. He is from Ohio, and he gave me a hell of a game in the first round of the Indy tournament. Actually, for that matter, the only reason that I even made it as far as I did because Murray was in a position to beat me just because I spent Tywin on his bear, which is ridiculous, but I spent Tywin's Reigns of Casimir to shut off a bear, a free unit. But it was a big moment because he had set up a rear charge using Harma's order and some really, really clever maneuvering to work his way behind my knights that were holding on to the center token. And if I hadn't shut off the bear, he would have been able to use Harma's order and take four attacks with no saves and then a -4 panic test. So it would have been really bad for me. But Murray gave me a great game, and he had a hell of a showing here in Ohio as well. So, Murray, if you want to go ahead and just real quick tell us how you got into A Song of Ice and Fire, any games that you played before, how long you've been playing, and what's drawn you into this game.
Thanks for having me on the show. I've been playing Song of Ice and Fire for since the Night's Watch starter came out. I got into the show, Game of Thrones, and hadn't really read the books, but since then, since playing the game, started reading the books. And I've been wanting to get into wargaming. Haven't really made the dive, and then saw that this was a less expensive hobby than like Warhammer and other games like that. So this was the gateway drug into wargaming, which since then I've started playing 40K, so didn't exactly save me from wasting a bunch of money. So
okay, fantastic. So let's see, the Night's Watch starter, that was Adepticon of 2019, like roughly before that. So you've been playing you're coming up on 2 years playing the game. Is that about right?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Nice. Okay. And then additionally, we've got Joe, who he came all the way from Rochester, New York, and he actually placed third with a Stark list. And he's brought with him his son, Gavin, who is 12 years old, and he was very much in the thick of the competition. And all of the feedback that I received and from talking to him, people have to watch out because he's really good at the game. And he had a very good chance to finish in the top five. He actually – well, I'll let him tell you about it when he gets there, but – this is Joe and Gavin. So we'll start with you, Joe. How long have you played? What got you into the game? And do you have any other wargaming experience?
Okay, guys, can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Can you hear me now? Okay. Yeah. I had to take you off a speaker, so I'll have to give Gavin the phone when it's his turn. I haven't played any war games before this. I was into board games for a little bit. After our first child, which was Gavin, we're stuck at home a little bit more, and that's kind of when we got into board games around here. And one time I was at our local shop, which is Millennium Games in Rochester. It's awesome. It's huge. People there are great. And I saw that they had the Kickstarter for this, for the Game of Thrones. They had an extra Hand of the King. And I was with my daughter at the time, and I said, oh, should I get this? It's really expensive. I mean, it's not expensive for a war game, but at the time, you know, I think it was $175 or something, which seemed like a lot. And she's like, well, it looks like a really good deal, and you really like that, you know, those books and that show. And so I got it. And it's a little bit more complex than the type of stuff that we were playing around here before that. So I would kind of talk friends into it every once in a while playing, and I played a couple games against myself to see how things work. Gavin kind of watched me doing that. He says, well, how do you play that? And so I showed him, and then, you know, we just started playing it. So I guess I was there right from the beginning, but we weren't real serious about it for a while. As far as my background in war games go, this would be it. And this tournament that we were at, this was only my second tournament, and it was Gavin's first.
Well, we're definitely happy that you made the trip. I mean, you guys made a heck of a trip to come out there, and it was definitely very good to meet you in person and meet him and have some conversations with you. Overall, the tournament was, you know, as you expect from A Song of Ice and Fire. I've said it many times before, this community is something entirely different. Everybody's super friendly. It seems just really relaxed compared to some of the other wargaming tournaments that you have. There's obviously a high level of competition. You know, people want to win, people play to win, but just this community is just something really special. And so, but outside of what you would expect from that event, seems like everybody had pretty good things to say about you two. So pretty cool. Definitely. We were glad to have you guys join. So, and then what about you, Gavin? Just been playing with your dad, and it seems like you've got a pretty good mentor. You were playing with some pretty heavy hitters there, and you managed to do pretty well.
Are you still there? I hear something in the background, but
yeah, I heard him say, yeah, he might have to speak up a little bit because it's very, really hard to hear.
I got into it basically when my dad started getting into it. He pretty much just showed me the game, and I didn't get into it for a little bit. Then I got into it. My first one was about Lannister, and then I made a really nice one with the mountain that rides. And then for my birthday, I got the Night's Watch. So then I got into that, and I basically have been playing that ever since.
Very good. Yeah, Night's Watch. There's something that's just really appealing about that army. Obviously, they are no secret. They're my favorite army. Just a really good looking army, really good sculpts, and I just love the play style. So definitely a good choice for you to get involved with them. They've been strong since they came out.
Did you
go ahead, Dave?
I'm sorry. When did you say you started? Did you start like Adepticon? Is that when you said you got your Night's Watch starter?
I got my Night's Watch set at my birthday, my 12th birthday.
Oh, nice. That's awesome. Yeah, Night's Watch is definitely a great faction to start up. Gets you, I think, out of any starter, I think it gives you like the most bang for your buck. I think it's definitely the best starter of them all.
Yeah, I think it'd be hard to argue.
So before we jump into everyone's lists and like what they kind of face throughout the day, I wanted to just kind of point out some stats for the day. So we did have 20 total players. By faction, we had 5 Stark, 5 Night's Watch, 4 Baratheons, 3 Lannisters, 2 Free Folk, 1 Neutral, and 0 Targaryen. of those lists, we had the top commanders were 5 Othel Yarwick, 4 Holland Reed. So of the 10 lists between Night's Watch and Stark, all but one of them had their NCU commander. And then of the 3 or of the 5 Night's Watch, the other commander was Jon. So 3 of the 5 Night's Watch players chose Othel and Jon as their 2 commanders, which I can't blame. If I were to rank the Night's Watch commanders, I would put them at the top. Not to say that the other commanders aren't great. I think they're amazing. Personally, my favorite is Jor, and then you know Alistair and Donal Noy are both amazing as well, but I feel like the NCU, the free NCU from Othel plus his cards just gives Night's Watch that extra activation that they're kind of needing. And then again, John, even he does the same thing. He gives you that extra activation that they're needing with, you know, providing arguably the strongest, commander plus 3 cards in the game. Then next up we had Lannisters for the next 3 spots, which had 2 Gregor, 2 Tyrion, and 2 High Sparrow. So that means there's a combination of, because there was only 3 Lannister players, so they all had a combination of those 3 commanders. So there was no other commanders for Lannisters used. So that's kind of the breakdown between factions and commanders. And then one thing I have to note, just because I just got to do it. I know it's only 2 games, but of the 2 games that Blackfish played, he won both of them. So as you guys, some of you have been listening to the show a bit, you know that I'm a huge Blackfish fan. And to see that someone brought him in, let's see if he was only brought once or twice. Looks like he was brought twice.
I think it was Joe that was running Blackfish.
Yeah, he looks like he was brought twice, but I would I'm not the stats guru as Carlo is, but I would be curious to see if it was by the same player or 2 different players that played him each once, or if he chose to play him twice in 4 rounds. But either way, 2 times he was seen, he did win. It would also be cool to see what faction and mission they played, but regardless, a win is a win, and it's only there to improve Blackfish's stats. And I'm always for that because I think people kind of undervalue him, because when you look at the Starks, they have so many strong tools that it's he can be overshadowed because you got so much potential in that faction. So just one thing I kind of wanted to point out. And then as far as the faction win rate breakdown, we had Starks at top with a 67% win ratio, 8 wins of 12 total. Let's see. But one thing I am super surprised about is Free Folk was at 25% win rate. So I believe Free Folk are still rated number 2 faction overall in stats on the stats page. So to see that they only had a 25% win rate, I'm surprised. I mean, it could have been really tough matchups. I know all 4 missions rewarded field commanders. It's just kind of how the draw happened. And I don't know if that might have been a factor. Hard to say. Brett, are you able to kind of shed any light on maybe why that was? Maybe they had an uphill battle or something?
I know for sure that Murray was running Melisandre. In missions that favor field commanders, as you mentioned, Melisandre can be a menace. Free Folk commanders going in Cave Dweller Savages isn't something that a lot of people do. That's a debate for another day. I believe that that's where I would put my Free Folk commander because of Cersei and Melisandre. But with that said, I'm not sure if it was entirely Melisandre, maybe a little bit of Cersei as well, but I just think a lot of it is that due to some of these battle reports and people just kind of seeing how things happen, I think a lot of people for the most part are preparing for that panic kind of meta that you see from Melisandre, the Free Folk, and the Lannisters in particular. But just in general, people have equipped themselves to be able to deal with dealing with heavy panic damage. And if you take some of the ability for Free Folk to panic you away, then you find that they're even with Steyr, they're still a little bit underwhelming if they can't push through the panic damage. So I'm guessing that that could be a factor. It could be the matchup. I'm not entirely sure who all faced who. I know Adam is a Free Folk player. Adam, I think his name's Roark, is how you say it. And he's a strong player, so he could have just had some bad matches. I can't say for sure without looking at the site, but I can go have a look while we, if you want to interview the other two and kind of get into their list, what they brought, what they faced, and some trends that they saw. I can go look a little bit more into the matches that the Free Folk had.
Yeah, that works for me. We'll start with Murray. So could you kind of go over what faction you played and what your kind of lists were?
Yeah, sure. I decided to switch to Baratheon for this tournament. Wanted to go with something that didn't immediately melt when I got hit by something, unlike Raiders. So I ran a Courtney Penrose list. Had two Rose Knights, Cutthroat, a Flayedman, a Warden, and then, of course, you have Courtney, Eldon, and Peter for my NCAs. And then I ran a more aggressive Ramsey list with Ramsey sitting in some Rolor Faithful with Reek, Bastard's Girls with the Red Priestess, of course. Kind of abused that. Flayedmen, Wardens, Axel, Shira, and Mel to light some people on fire with all those tokens that you can get out with Ramsey's cards and the Bastard's Girls.
Nice. So it sounds like you went more of the elite, more of like a tough, units route especially with the Ramsey list, having that, the Faithful are sort of a glass cannon. I mean, their morale is so high that, I mean, it still adds to their defense, but that's kind of the same way with the Bastard's Girls. So it's not too bad there, but they have a lot of offensive potential, especially with the Ramsey and the Priestess adding to their strength. And then just the Flaidemen. I mean, Flaidemen, I feel, are still, they need to be just slightly bumped, but they definitely have their place, especially in a Stannis loyalty list with, you know, with Mel being able to, I'm assuming you either went with Bastos Girls or the Wardens when necessary to kind of take some wounds off to zap some people, just because the Bastos Girls don't degrade and the Wardens are just your kind of 5-point chaff, you know, sit on an objective.
Yeah, I definitely burned some Bastard Girls, and then also I actually hit Rolora a little bit when they weren't super integral with my offensive plan to deal some wounds and stuff like that. So, I generally left the Wardens alone because of the how quickly they degrade with their attack profile. You start melting off, two mels off of them, and the next thing you know, they're throwing 5 dice, and then they get hit, and they die from panic.
Yeah, I've only gotten to play with Rolore Faithful a couple times, and I absolutely love them. I actually have 3 units of them, one fully painted and 2 that are on their way. But, Rolore Faithful are definitely something to fear, especially when combined with a solid either like commander or even the Red Priestess. So I could definitely see how, you know, this list could definitely, you know, pack a punch if your opponent's not ready for it. How many times did you use each list?
So I took Courtney in my first round, and then I took Ramsey the last 3. Ramsey actually carried me for the tournament. I won 3 of 3 with Ramsey. And Courtney, I lost with him. But also it might be that I was playing a really good player, and Bill bringing his neutrals. Brett warned me about him when he saw my matchup, and he kicked my butt.
Yeah, that's surprising, not to say anything to Bill's talent or his list, but Rose Knights are a hard nut to crack. So the fact that you have 2 of them, with a Warden and a Flaidman, I mean, that's something that is not easily done. Now, was it more of a, you know, whooped your butt on the field, like beating up your men, or just was able to capture like objectives a bit faster than you?
So that round was Here We Stand, and I'll fully admit that I wasn't fully aware of the new rules where you could actually, it's 1 point for each quadrant, not more on your opponent's side. So I played way more aggressive to try to capitalize on getting some of those points, thinking that I could take the other side of the table. And that ultimately played into Bill being more cautious, waiting for him to, for me to come to him, and then hitting me hard. And I just made some misplays. It was my worst game that I played. Generally, I start out too aggressive. And when I play too aggressively, typically the better players make me pay. And then from then on, I played more strategically and was able to pick when I could make those attacks, baiting out some attacks for counter charges. And I actually didn't draw a single counter charge, last stand. I think I drew one of Ours is a Fury during that game with Bill. So and he also took the letter for me a lot, so I couldn't get much card draw.
Yeah, the Here We Stand is an amazing mission, but it's one of those ones that even before the change, if you didn't play it enough, it's hard to get into the groove of, you know, quadrants, especially – you know, I can't tell you how many times I think I've lost my wife now. I'm 0-3 against her in that mission because I overestimate where my units are placed. And it's one of those missions that you definitely want to do a lot of pre-measuring to see where your units are sitting, like what quadrants, because a lot of times it's like they're right on the line. I mean, the action is happening right at the, you know, where the lines, where the quadrants are intersecting. So you want to, you know, in that mission in particular, constantly pre-measure to see where things are sitting and to make it clear to your opponent what your intention is or where, what quadrant they are in, because sometimes they can be so close, like 50-50, and you definitely don't want that decision going to your opponent, because I believe that's if it is 50-50, your opponent gets to decide what quadrant. Though I do like that they added that commanders do give 3 additional points wherever they are placed. So that's definitely nice. It gives a little bonus to the NCU commanders. Did you ever find yourself using your NCUs in that way?
Oh, I was playing so far behind on things that for that game mode that I, by the time I would be like, okay, I need to throw down, you know, Courtney in the zone or something like that, there wasn't a zone, like a part of the board, like the tactics board to take and say, all right, they're going to go into this quadrant. I think that's part of the rules or something like that, where you have to have an open zone to take or something.
I don't think they have to have an open zone. I think you just can forego activating them normally to put them on the field, but only one can be in each quadrant. So yeah, Penrose, though he normally costs, or because he's a commander and costs 0, he would count as 3 points if you placed him somewhere. But I know that's it's a tough decision to make, because not getting a spot on the tactics board is a pretty big deal. So it's very situational. I know when the first 2 games I played, I didn't use that ability once, because you're just kind of not used to it. You know, it's kind of in the back of your mind, and you tend to like not think about it. So run me through. I know you kind of already talked about your first game a little bit, if you want to recap it and then kind of go on with your second, third, and fourth round for us.
So first round, played pretty poor overall as far as against Bill. Being way too aggressive, overextending. Bill also shut down my Flayedman's abilities with Roos's card when they're panicked, and I just completely forgot to use the counterplot that was in my hand. So I got a charge off and didn't get vicious or panicked, and I don't have a lot to say about that game other than just Bill outplayed me pretty much all around. Just it was a pretty bad game. He's a very good player. Huh?
Yeah, I was going to say, if I can interject really quickly, I know you mentioned that I kind of gave you a warning before the game, and we won't keep any secrets about it. I just kind of pulled you off to the side, and I was like, yeah, I know this. I know he's playing neutral, but don't sleep on Bill. So just for everybody who's listening, we're talking about ORJ Bill. So he's kind of known in the TTS community. He's just a very good neutral player, and he's a neutral player to the core, and he is one of the best. I know Justin is actually a really good neutral player, the normal host, and then Chris Tran, Bolton Skincare, is a great neutral player, and then Bill's right there. I mean, it's tough to call it between the three of those, because I've seen them all play, and if you understand the neutrals deck, that army can be devastating, and Bill is just one of those guys. He just knows how to work that deck,
He knows his army. He knows what he can get away with. He knows when things need to die. He knows when he can recover from it. So just definitely, I feel where you're coming from. But Bill is a phenomenal player, and he's also a very funny guy. And I'll just say I didn't – when I saw him and kind of put the faith to his name and his voice, I was pretty surprised. Bill is – he's just, yeah, I had a great dinner with him afterwards. I can't say enough good things about Bill. Big fan of ORJ Bill.
Yeah, he played great and nothing but smiles and going, well, you got me, man. You got me good. So my second game, I played Calvin. He actually is a local player in Dayton where we're from. And he brought a Gregor list. And I actually chose to bring Ramsey for this one. So I could use Mel, take advantage of Lannister's pretty poor morale, particularly to try to light on fire those Knights of Castle Rock, because I don't want to go attacking them with Lannister supremacy. So my strategy was just to basically burn them up and with Mel and try to hop on that. This was Dance with Dragons was the game mode, and try to hop on that NCU turn off so that way he couldn't do that. But it just so happens the way it played out, I was able to – he didn't actually take it right away, and I was able to get two Mel shots off before he took it with Gregor, and Gregor was sitting in some Warrior Sons, and then I was able to then charge them with my flayed men and then tie up Gregor pretty much for the rest of the game until I was able to take him out. And I was able to table him by, I want to say, like the third or fourth round. I can't remember. It was either late third or early fourth. But Calvin's a fun guy to play with. Just so happened that he got some bad dice rolls on his panic with Mel, and then I was able to get Axel on there with a weakened token, and he had no way to get rid of that token. And I was able to, when he activated the knights, to snipe him off with Axel. So it was a pretty fun game. My third game, I played another guy that actually drove up with me, Jason Gilmore. We were playing Fire and Blood. I brought an Othel list where he had Attachment John and Sworn Brothers, Attachment Dario and Sworn Brothers, Crossbows and Trackers. And I can't remember what his NCUs were, but I want to say they're Othel, Corrin, and I think Aemond. And funny thing is, when we came into town the other night for the tournament, we were able to play a quick game at the store that night, and we actually played these exact same lists in Fire and Blood. And I was able to, unfortunately, figure out what he was going to do in this game mode and take it to him. And I went pretty aggressive on him, waited for him to overextend a little bit, and then punched him hard with Flayed Men and Bastard Skrulls. And Ramsey was able to do some work, too, in that game. And then the last game was against Gary, a local guy from Gamers Haven. It was a mirror matchup of Baratheons for Feast for Crows. I took Ramsey again and was able to actually, basically, I just took one side of the board, one side where the corpse pile was, and just let him have the other side and made it where his slower stuff, like Rose Knights, where he deployed them, deployed on the other side so I could take on his more squishier things like cutthroats gang up on his flayed Ben, and then just had him kind of come towards me and was able to choose some good time to do some counter charges, and then also some Cruel Methods. Cruel Methods is such a good good combo with the Bastards Girls to punch right in, and especially if you have first player the next round, I was able to do a pretty hard swing and take out his cutthroats, and then start working on his finishing off his flayed men leading into the next round. And it came down to just like trying to get those this extra Mel, just more time you can have with activating Mel, burning guys up. It just led to my advantage. She's just such a powerful NCU, especially when you throw in like with the Ramsey card that throws out two tokens or does automatic hits, and most people are taking the tokens. Just a overall nasty list for Feast for Crows. It was I had a great time playing against Gary. I would probably say that's the most fun game and lighthearted game that we had. We just had a blast the whole time. Great guy. I would love to play against him again. Just had a great attitude the whole time. Very cheerful dude.
Nice. So in regards to your list, I just had a couple questions before we move on. So would you say overall, especially only having four combat units, suggest Mel to other people, or do you think maybe she was a little too pricey for what she did, or how would you kind of rate Mel, especially with only four units and not a lot to like sacrifice?
Yeah, going from playing in the indie tournament with Raider Spam and Bears to a four combat activation list is quite a big difference. But having Mel being able to be almost like a guaranteed attack if you can get those panic tokens out to help assist guaranteeing her ability will actually do wounds. But nothing sucks more than burning three dudes off your off one of your units and then having them pass a panic test with box cards or something like that. Or
an auto pass card.
Oh yeah, actually that was very unfortunate to not go up against like anybody that had auto pass cards. It would have been way rough, and so thankful for that. She is a heavy investment, but I mean, there's just too many pros I see for her. But I mean, like as soon as when you get into a meta that is super activation heavy, I mean, I imagine if I played some Starks or Free Folk, I'd probably feel differently, you know. So I played neutral, which I think he had eight activations. Lannister, I want to say he had seven. Night's Watch, I think had seven. Seven. And then I think Gary had eight, I want to say. So I didn't play anything that was breaching into like the 9, 10s and stuff like that. So I think I was pretty fortunate with those matchups.
Yeah, and I think seven is a solid number for activations. And Mel herself is just, you know, the fear factor even, you know, regardless of what she does on the field. I think just seeing her in a list, you know, provides a level of, you know, like the opponent can't take her for granted. They're going to have to deal with her because you always have to prepare for the worst. And the worst being, you know, you're rolling max and doing seven wounds every time she takes a spot on the board. And, you know, you can't really survive, you know, seven times 6 rounds worth of wounds to your stuff, especially when you have flayed men, you know, charging into you. If Mel can soften up a unit, you know, 7 wounds, even 6, and the flayed men, you know, the flayed men can just mop them up. I mean, not to mention the other, your other units could mop them up too, but the flayed men with their, you know, with their range. And then my last question before we move on, I know you only used the list once, but could you kind of run us through the idea of why you decided to go with Peter Baelish as one of your 3 NCUs?
Well, Brett was the one that was saying you should run Peter because the flexibility of being able to take whatever you need on the board for your cards and then being able to choose whatever action you need if you play them early. So it was a good idea and a good pick by Brett to suggest that. Healing, sure, that'd be really good with taking Tycho with those Rhodes Knights, but fortunately you can't, you know, the Rhodes Knights ability doesn't stack for each one they heal. So, you could take Varus, but I don't know about you guys with your rolls with Varus. I seem to roll a lot of ones and twos with them. So, Peter, if you take the board early with them, you can go and take the crown and draw extra cards. You could take the letter to guarantee for some of those Courtney cards, and then get an extra attack off, and or even take the swords, but you know, from your opponent or something, for if he has some range units, they're going to get some shots off and then replace it. Is, you know, Peter's just a great all around. Neutral players, I guess, know that most of all, how good he is.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely love running Peter. I think I've mentioned it once on the show previously, but one of my favorite combos is just running Peter with Alistair and Shira, because unless they have some way to shut off your NCU, or maybe they have Alistair of their own, but there's very few counters to it. If you run Alistair and Peter, you can guarantee yourself any spot on the board 5 rounds out of the game. And a lot of times 5 rounds is all you do. And you might not even need it first round. So let's say you want the letter every single round for the Baratheon keyword. You can make sure you have it 5 rounds out of the game. So it's definitely a combo I suggest anyone listening to give a whirl to. I like combining with lists with like 4 Stormcrow lieutenant attachments, because Wardens with a +1 die and Sundering really gives them that extra bite, combined with their, you know, already being so tough for 5 points. So it's one of those things to kind of look into. Brett, why don't you kind of take us away with interviewing for our other guest.
Joe and Gavin. Yeah, sure.
Yes.
So I guess let's start with you, Joe. You came in 3rd place. Definitely a really strong outing, particularly with you saying you haven't been to a lot of tournaments, and seems like maybe outside of you and Gavin, you don't play a lot of games, and there was definitely some strong competition there. So kudos to you on that. So let's just kind of go into it with which lists you selected, and if you want to do something similar to what Murray did there and just kind of give us maybe some highlights, who you played against, what made you choose the list that you chose, and any strong performers in those lists that you recommend people give a try. I know your Rob list, I was actually just talking about it today. I'll let you explain it, but I really like the 3 zone denials that you have in that list. It's really, really scary. So if you want to kind of, yeah, just basically similar to what Murray did, give us a recap and what your thought process was.
Okay. Well, for my two, I had 2 lists, but I only used 1 of them. And I'll explain why I did that in a minute. I'll just kind of read through my Rob list. I used this for all 4 games. I had Sworn Swords with Rob as my commander. Grey Winds, Stark Bowman with Rickon and Osha. Stark Outriders, Tully Cavaliers, and Shaggy Dog. So, and then my three NCUs were Walder Frey, Lord Varys, and Sansa Stark. And the idea, as you mentioned, I got a little advice from Brett on my list. My second list that I actually didn't use, but I really liked it. But I used it once in a practice game, but I didn't use it at the tournament. Now, with the first list, the idea was I wanted to control engagements. And I figured with Rob's cards and two cavalry, and then the Bowman that can shoot long range and over anything, that kind of gives me a lot of zone control. And I figured just if I'm playing an aggressive player, well, then I'll get some hits on them first or you know, let them overextend. And if I was playing somebody that was more passive, well, then I could kind of move up slowly on them and just decide when I want to engage. So that was kind of the idea behind that list. Walder Frey, for obvious reasons, I think he's great. I always find him very frustrating to play against. And a lot of times when I build my list against Gavin, if I know he's using Walder Frey or if I think he's going to use them, then I'll kind of build a list that I don't mind getting canceled too much. So I don't want to put a lot of attachments on. I don't want to use things that rely on a lot of abilities. Now, as far as my second list goes, this is one that Brett gave me help with, and this is a really cool list. I did use it as a practice game, but I never used it in a tournament. And the main reason why I didn't use the list was because I had a lot more experience with the Rob list, and with just my comfort level at the tournament, I just felt like I was getting better as the day went on, and I really felt comfortable with the Rob list, and I was really hitting my stride with it, so I stayed with it. But my second list was the other Brendan list. So it was Sworn Swords with Brendan Tully, Berserkers with Rickon and Osha, Shaggy Dog, another Berserkers, Naked, and Tully Cavaliers. And then my non-combat units were Tycho, Eddard, and Sansa. And the idea was that that's a really good morale list. I think that the Cavaliers would be the worst morale at 5. And if they're giving off their aura to the other ones, then you're looking at a 3 morale for the other 3 units. And so the idea was that there's some armor breakers in there. If I had to fight Lannisters or Baratheons that are going to use their panic list, then I would be ready for that, and I'd be able to break their armor. I did not play Baratheon or Lannister. And then my last game was against Bill's neutrals, and I just decided that I really wanted the zone control against them. I figured I'd be fighting a lot of cutthroats, so I didn't really need the armor breakers, and that's why I went with my first list. So my first round, I played Chris Tran, and he was awesome. I mean, everybody I played, everybody there was great. It's a really great community, and it was a lot of fun. And Chris he taught me a few things. It was a mirror match. He used Howland, so it wasn't a great matchup for me with another Stark list. We were playing the Here We Stand, and he just kind of got up on me early, and I had units off the board because you get to respawn them, but it really helps to kill units in that mode because then they can't use them to grab a zone. And he uses Varys like real early in the game, right off the bat, and probably burned his 4 tokens. I would say in the first 2 rounds, maybe 1 in the third. Whereas I kind of held on to mine, thinking I'll wait for the right time. And that was a lesson learned for me, is that use them right away. This is a game where you get some momentum and you can really take advantage of it, especially in that scenario where having more units gives you more points to grab zones. And so, like I said, I learned something from him. He was a great player, and I ended up coming back a little bit at the end, but it just wasn't enough. It was too little, too late. And he had too much of a leg up on me on that one. So I lost my first match, and like I said, I learned a lot from it. Then my second match was against Andrew from Buffalo, and he was using Free Folk, and it was the first time I'd ever played Free Folk, so I was kind of excited about that. And I drew my cards, and I had really like the perfect set of cards, and the scenario was Dance with Dragons. So I had some great cards to begin. I couldn't tell you exactly what they were, but they were some of the movement stuff that Rob likes. And I was able to grab two of the tokens right off the bat. And then Andrew sent up a giant up the flank. It would have been my left side, his right side, to grab a token. And what I've learned from playing this game is you get units like the Great Axes where the best thing you can do is just stay away from them. And Gavin and I have kind of talked about that strategy before. When you see a unit like that, you just kind of stay away from him. And so I said, all right, well, if he's going to take the flank, and I had my cavalry, my cavaliers across from them, the Tullys, and I basically just bailed out. I just kind of sent him over to the middle of the map, and he stayed on that token with his giant while I got points on the other ones and really just picked apart his army. I waldered his trappers, and I just kind of was able to just charge through everything. So Andrew's a real nice guy, but really, like, the game couldn't have gone better for me. Everything went my way. Varys hit all four of his tokens, and it was just a good round for me. Then I played Dakota from Roll 'Em If You Got 'Em, another real nice guy. This was another mirror match for me. He did Eddard, who's probably my other favorite commander. He probably is my favorite commander. But I didn't want to take him to the tournament because I knew there'd be a lot of good players there. And to me, Ned Stark is kind of easy to play against if you know what you're doing and if you're a good player. And so I didn't want to take him, but he brought him, so props to him. It was Fire and Blood, and it literally was a bloodbath. It was probably the funnest game of the day, we were both saying. His first kill was, I think, the beginning of the second round, and it was my archers, and he got 5 points from them. So that was the first kill of the game. I said, oh, man, I'm down 5 points. But he kind of overcommitted to do it, and so I was able to kind of eat up his Eddard unit, and I knew once I could take him down that I would be in a much better spot. And then I also used my Outriders. And my Outriders were really my MVP of the tournament. And what they did is they charged up on his Tully Cav and just kind of stayed in his face and didn't let him get a good charge off. And if you can get an Outrider against a Tully Cav engaged, well, the Outriders are actually a better unit at that point. And especially if you can get the Sundering card, I think it's Northern Fury maybe or something. But it's, what is it? Gavin said it's Northern Ferocity. So anyway, that gives you Sundering. And so I was able to get through his armor. And like I said, I just kind of stayed on him. And it was a pretty close game. A lot of units were destroyed and it was just a ton of fun. That's probably my favorite scenario. And he was a great guy to play in it, and it was seeing two Stark armies just destroy each other was kind of fun. And then my last game was Feast for Crows against Bill with his neutrals. And so when I saw that, I said, okay, well, this is a chance for my Blackfish army. But the reason I didn't go with that is I was pretty sure that he was going to use his Walder. So I wanted my Varys in there. I also knew that he had some soft units. And so I wanted to use my zone denial, my charges to really – I figured if I could take out his cutthroats right away, then I would be in a good spot. I think that this game, though, I kind of won it with deployment. What I did is I put my Robb Stark on the right flank as if I was going to go for the corpse pile and the token. And so he put his flaymen over there. And what I did is I moved up with Rob real slow, like I was just kind of being careful. I let his flamemen get the token, and then I just kind of stayed out of range and got ready for the charge, and then I could use his the Rob Captain's order to give him a disorderly charge. He was happy sitting on the token until he realized that on the other side of the map that I was taking it to him pretty good. Bill, he's an amazing player. I've never seen neutrals play the way that he did. He used his cards great. He kept track. He's keeping track of what cards are still in his deck. I don't think I've ever seen anybody do that before, and that was really cool. And he just, I mean, he really, in my mind, he pretty much played a perfect game. But just like I said, I had a splayed men kind of on the one side, and I think he killed off one of my wolves, and so I grabbed one token with my outriders right from the beginning of the game, and I grabbed the other token with my Tully Kaz, killed off, I believe, both of his cutthroats. So I had a point advantage, and I had the two tokens. There's three tokens the entire game. I had two of them. And so suddenly he realized I can't just sit on this token with my flayed men because his blackguard just weren't going to be able to take me out quick enough. And so that's when he decided to charge Rob. Eventually he got through Rob, and he got to the other side of the map. And by then it was too late. I'd gotten to 10 points. It was a really close game, but I just kind of outpointed him towards the end. And I think the victory points were 10-5, but it was really close. He had killed off more of my units by the end of the game, but I just had outpointed him. And in that game, Varys failed all four of his tokens. So that wasn't very helpful. But I made, I think, every single panic test that game, which a Feast for Crows against, I think he's a Roost list, Feast for Crows, and a lot of negatives to my morale test. So that's where I got really lucky. My attacks weren't good, my barriers wasn't good, but I stayed alive, and that's kind of what won me that game.
Yeah, I mean, in that scenario in particular, because when you fail a panic test, you lose control of the token. And if you fail while you're engaged with an enemy, you pass the token to them. So depending on if it's a commander, it can end up being a 2-point swing, a 3-point swing, or a 4-point swing. If your commander drops it to his commander, you're denied 2, he gains 2, so it's a 4-point swing. It's pretty massive. Playing in particular against a neutrals list that has all of that vicious. I'm a little bit surprised you didn't go with the Blackfish just for the resiliency, but it sounds like you made the right choice. The activation advantage can never be overstated in this game. And your Rob bringing 9 activations to the table, even against the 8 from the neutrals, it can be pretty big. So it sounds like you played it the right way. Again, you know, I know Bill's a phenomenal player, so I'm sure he gave you everything that you could handle trying to bring you down and just using that neutrals deck to his advantage. But I think in the end, the activations end up being what matters a lot, and then passing panic tests and just the fact that it sounds like you played a pretty good game. You had a pretty good strategy, and you stuck to that. And that can be another thing that's huge in just in this game in general is – a lot of times you see people, they go into a game and like they have a game plan and they have a strategy. And if you rattle their cage a little bit, they kind of try to reverse course on that strategy. But that's often like a game losing thing. Like if you've got what you're doing, even if it has a little bit of a hiccup, it can often work out to your advantage to just stick to what you know works and have faith in what works for you and not try to just make those overextending plays and those desperate plays. A lot of times the player with the most patience and the player who just drives through it is the player that wins. So the term is tilted. You know, you hear that term a lot. You get your player kind of, you do something and they don't expect it and things start to go against what they want to do. And then sometimes players just overcompensate and start to play bad. So it sounds like you didn't do that. And you stuck to the plan, and so that's generally the thing to do to live through those types of situations. So very good on you. Again, yes, very very strong competition at this event. Very strong players, and
you did a really nice job. So pretty impressive.
So Brett,
I guess we
Brett,
can move on to Gavin now really quick, if you want to just give us.
Sorry, just we have a quick caller, a surprise guest, I would say. We have on Chris from Sunday Slaughter who wanted to say something to Brett.
Bolton Skincare. What's going on, buddy? So I told Dave that I was just going to hop off and congratulate you on your first place win, but that was just a ruse because I'm just here to razz you because, you know, I should have won that match that I played against you. Just saying.
No, I totally agree. I have openly admitted that that flank charge into John should have been the icing on the cake, but John decided not today, bro. Five out of 10, five up. You had me. I don't even pretend like you didn't. This dude had cruel methods 3 times in this game, 2 of which were Bowman with Kranigman Warden. No, it wasn't. It was Bowman with Kranigman Warden, Outriders, and Berserkers, right?
Yeah, Rampant's One Sword.
The Bowman with the Warden into the trackers was devastating. Like, it was 2 shots in a row, 8 attack dice with rerolls. I don't know how they lived through that. Would they live with 2 wounds? I mean, I did play Shield of the Realms of Men, but that was a small miracle in and of itself. But no, you and Bob gave me everything that I could handle. And yeah, I came out of it by the skin of my teeth. Our game was particularly close. Yeah, I think the reality of it is you had probably 7 or 8 paths to victory, and they just didn't work out. I had like 2. Like, John lives through this, and I kill your commander. John lives through the impossible odds of a flank charge from 8 dice Sworn Brothers. Now let's pause for a second. Let's talk about a really clutch moment. You charge into the cutthroat or into my conscripts with sudden charge. Caught me sleeping on that one. But you rolled a 3 for Stark Fury. And then when you activated Ramsey, this was like an underplayed, huge thing. Rhea died. So you lost 2 attack dice from rolling a 3 for Stark Fury and from killing Rhea. That right there, like, you say what you want about the defensive dice. Sometimes those things happen. That little itty-bitty string of bad luck right there is probably the clincher, because if you come in there with 10 attack dice and Stark Fury, there's no way John survives. There's no way that I'm rolling, you know, 6 or 7 5-ups out of 12.
Okay,
or 11 or 12.
I'm gonna stop you right there because you're just going to cause flashbacks, and I'm going to lose even more sleep this week. So, but the reason I called is, you know, I still want to congratulate you, and not only you, but Murray and Joe. I didn't get to play against Murray, but I've met him in Indy and this event as well, and he's an awesome dude, and, you know, Joe as well. Like, you guys deserve to be in the top 3. So, congrats to you 3. I'll hop off so you guys can wrap up, but I just want to say hey and congratulations. So,
no, we love having you on. Chris Tran, Sunday Slaughter, A Song of Ice and Fire celebrity, dope battle report, and I've been singing the Gamers Haven praises. I've been telling people. So if you run into Bolton Skincare or Lord Commander Bob or Wildcard Carl or Dakota, what's his handle?
It's just Dakota, I think. Or Captain Co, maybe.
Oh.
Something like that.
Captain Co. That's him. Captain Co. Yeah, you better be you bring your A game. No matter what the stats site says. They're very, very strong players, so a warning to the community. Don't let Bolton Skincare sneak up on you.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm going to hop off, but all right, you guys. I'll talk to you guys later.
All right. See you, buddy.
See ya.
Okay, so are you ready, Gavin, to go over your list choices and who you faced and some of the super key moments from those games? You definitely have to tell how close your game with Chris was, but you saved that for the end. It's a heartbreaker.
Okay. So both my armies are almost the exact same. My veterans, so my first army was with Jon Snow on veterans, and then I had Ghost, Ranger Trackers, Conscripts, Conscripts. And my second army is, MCUs, I had Corrin, Donald Noy, and Bowen Marsh. So then my second army is almost the exact same. On veterans, I have Attachment Jon Snow. And everything's pretty much the same. Conscripts with a Watch Captain because I have an extra point because instead of Bowen Marsh, I have Ortho Yorwick. So my first game went pretty well. It was a pretty close game. I won by, I think, a point. And I just pretty much won by zone control. And then we ran out of time, and we had to move on to our next game. So at the end, I ended up having enough points to win by 1 point. So that was a really close game, and I enjoyed it a lot. I was playing against the Stark Army. And since that was Huey's stand, and you need at least 5 point units to hold zones, I used my 5 point conscripts because they have a Watch Captain. So that's the only one I actually ever used my Ortho list. My second game was against Adam, which was he was a really, really good Free Folk player, and I ended up getting it was okay close, but I think we ran out of time, and he kind of had me cornered and pretty much just picked up the objectives, ran away, and then put his raiders in front of his Bone Chosen, I believe. Bone Lord's Chosen. So he basically got away with the objectives, and he played it pretty well. And I think the biggest weakness in that game was I ended up not trying to stay away from the giant, which was in the exact middle of the board, which kind of costed me a lot of time and points. So I think that was pretty much my biggest flaw. The next game went pretty well. I did something for the very first time, and I just packed everything in a corner. Yeah, that went because I was going against a pretty familiar army. I was going against Jeff, and I believe he won Best Pain. His army was really cool. It was a House Clegane army. And so I had a crushing victory against Jeff. I believe I tabled him. And it was really close. And I think this was the only game where I actually used Corrin Halfhand. And I used it on the Knights of Casterly Rock, which I know how deadly they are because I do play a lot of Lannister. So that I knew what to do there. And that was a pretty good game for me. But I think me being able to move my guys here and there was pretty lucky. I think that was just a lucky how it worked out and what cards I got. So my last game, which is a really close game, I played against Chris. Chris gave me a great game. And I ended up getting tabled just barely. It came down to my conscripts and the panic check, which, you know, like all I needed to roll was a 9. So it didn't go very well. But, it was really close. Only two people left on the board. And that was my very first time against Baratheons. So it was interesting. I thought that was a really close match, and the MCU that he used, what's its name?
Melisandre.
She was really, really good. A little bit broken, but I think it was such a great pick, and I think that's probably, like, if you don't have that in your army, that's a little bit of a waste, but I think that's probably a go-to MCU. And I think that MCU is just such a big game changer.
And I would just like to add, I thought everybody was great with Gavin. You know, everybody was he was obviously the youngest one there. Competitively, I wasn't worried about him, but just, you know, in terms of how welcoming everybody would be, and they were really great. Special shout out to Jeff. I think he was the Shield Wall Gaming guy. He had this amazing painted army, and if he provides products anything like his paint jobs, then you know, we'll be ordering a lot from him. He was really awesome, and he was great. I got to watch. That was the only time I got to watch Gavin play a little bit, as I caught the end of their game, and he seemed like a really nice guy, and his army looked great.
Yeah, again, I think the community is great, and yeah, I kind of knew going into it, just because I know most of these guys, that everybody would be friendly and receptive to him. So I'm glad that translated to what actually happened. I wasn't really worried about it, but definitely it's different. It's not something you see a lot. So someone as young as him playing and playing at a competitive level is really impressive. And actually, honestly, Chris Bloom is a strong player. So he's the gentleman that I played at our substitute Gen Con event on the top table. So he is not unfamiliar with tournaments and winning big games and getting in the position to win those games. Played him that closely, particularly when it's your first time playing Baratheons, is really impressive, because their tactics deck, if you don't know what you're getting into, it's one of those massive, like, gotcha tactics deck. Like if you don't anticipate the counter charges, if you don't see, you know, the letter and Stag's resilience coming, that army can really just take you apart. So I don't know if you did any homework on them, or just you intuitively saw some of their triggers and saw how things were being set up. Either way, it's really impressive, particularly with R'hllor Faithful and their Vicious and Red Priestesses and every single one. Causing vulnerable and panic, and the fact that you were able to come out of that game as healthy as you did is pretty impressive. So giving you plenty of props on that, because they are not an easy army to tackle, and certainly not when it's your first time playing them. So very nice job on that, Gavin.
Thank you.
So I guess that leaves me, right? And then I'm gonna make this as quick as possible. Is that right, Dave?
Yeah.
Okay. So the first round, I drew Calvin and his Lannisters. It was Here We Stand. I got an early lead in that one very quickly. I baited out the Knights of Castle Rock, and then I allowed for his crossbows to make a ranged attack. It's not something that I ever want to do, you know, getting shot by crossbows, but I fed him a unit that I didn't really overly mind being shot, because it triggered my Watcher on the Wall. And at that point, I sent Lord Snow's Sworn Brothers into the Knights of Castle Rock. And this happened relatively early, because in this scenario, you start so closely. But with precision enhancement on Lord Snow, 10 attack dice, critical blows, sundering, it's just devastating. I landed 3 sixes out of those 10 dice, and then 7 more hits. So I hit with everything, and on top of that, 3 of them were sixes. So at that point, I was in his flank, so he was saving on 5, and they were vulnerable from the trackers. So as I recall, I think I charged his knights with my trackers to pin them in place, and then let the bow shoot me to set up that watcher play. So he was down his Knights of Castle Rock very early. It was either round 2, possibly even round 1, that happened. So it's pretty hard to come back from that as a Lannister player. Of course, they redeploy, but they come on activated. So I was able to pin them down again for the rest of the game with the mobility of the trackers. So it's pretty tough comeback. And then in the Battle of the Bows, I just can't overstate how powerful Opal's cards are with Builder Crossbowmen. So in the Battle of the Bowmen, I'm not overly worried about his bows, even if they get a jump on me, because they have to kill the Bowmen down to four guys before they lose attack dice. With Corrin Halfhand in the mix, and Othel giving you critical blow and sundering, critical blow and sundering. They already have sundering, but the critical blows and the rerolls is what you're after with Othel. So with Corrin Halfhand, you get 8 shots with Builder Crossbowmen, and with rerolls and critical blows, they're literally exactly the same thing as a unit of Sworn Brothers charging you. That is devastating. Additionally, they can't be disordered, so you don't ever have to worry about that. So you're getting 8 attack dice, hitting on threes with rerolls and crits and sundering. It's just devastating. That unit of Bowmen, I like that unit to bring down any ranged unit in the game. If we're coming up and attacking each other, that's fine, because even if you get the first shot, I could shield of the Realms of Men and mitigate that damage. And then even if I've got 5 guys shooting into you, it's the same number of dice, and I've got a very good chance to one-shot you with one volley from those crossbows. So that's what ended up happening in that game. The Battle of the Archers was won by me. And then at the very end of the game, I had to use Corrin Halfhand because he had Warrior Sons that had made their way into my flank. The game was pretty tight, even with him losing the knights early and everything else that happened, the game was really close. So I had to Corrin and freeze the Warrior Sons, and that pretty much sealed the game on that one. So then the next match was a Jon Snow mirror match. I almost chose Othel in this match again. This was Dance with Dragons because I had a feeling he was going to run the Jon Snow veteran. He was actually running my old variation of my Jon Snow list, the one that has 2 veterans of the watch. Vets with Jon, vets by themselves, Ranger Trackers, Sworn Brothers, and then Amon, Donald Noy, and Craster. It's just a really tough list. If you aren't bringing panic damage, it's almost impossible to break through that list, at least in a meaningful way. The reason I stopped running that variation is because the panic meta is so strong right now that that's exactly what happened. They would just bring the veterans down with panic. But as far as playing against aggressive armies who don't have vicious, they just can't get through it. They just can't get through it. With Donald Noy and Amon, even if you charge with Tully Cav and get 14 hits, with Donald Noy pushing it back to 3, you're not going to be able to push through those veterans. And then Amon's ability to heal them back up, John's cards healing them back up. I firmly believe the only way to get through that list is with auto wounds or severe panic damage. So playing that game, I didn't like it. I didn't like my chances for my Jon Snow list to take his Jon list, but I took the risk. Because Corrin Halfhand is the difference maker there as well. Because if he doesn't have 4 the watch and he doesn't claim the maneuver zone, my Jon can get to the token before his Jon. Then it's pretty difficult to get the token back because the veterans don't have any way of doing panic damage. So I ended up going and picking up the token. I shut off Amon. And then from there, I let his veterans on the opposite side pick up the token, and then I just left them alone. I didn't even approach them, didn't attack them, just let them slowly move forward. And then I took my 6 combat units against his 4 on the other side of the board. And I was able to get some really clutch 2 attacks in on Jon. And I shut him off with Walder to stop the healing and to stop counterattacks, because counterattacks will erode Sworn Brothers, particularly when Donald Noy is in the mix and you can't spend vulnerable tokens on them. So I had to shut off Jon for at least 2 or 3 rounds until I was finally able to bring him down. And then from there, I just had to kind of deal with the Sworn Brothers. So next round was Chris Tran. I gave you a little preview of that. Basically, Ramsay Stark for aggressive list. 8 activations, but again, Walder is a difference maker. That's why I chose the Jon list, because it has Walder Frey. Starks actually have no way to stop the Walder Frey 1-turn, 2-turn kill, whereas Night's Watch with Ghost, if you wait to put Amon or Craster down and they don't have Varus, they can't stop you from healing a wound off of Ghost. Starks, on the other hand, if you cover up the money bags with Walder, they don't have any way to heal the token. If they had Eddard, I guess they could make a charge. But if you're out of their charge range, they don't have a way to heal. So that's a big deal. When I was able to kill Summer and swing the activation 9-7 in my favor, but then
I got a kill on his Bowman with another watcher on the wall. This time I played for the watch on John simply to get the 7-inch maneuver because I had to cross into his line to kill the Bowman. I didn't want John to be stranded, and I kind of measured it out, and I had to have the 7 inches to make it to where his outriders couldn't flank John. So I played for the watch, killed the Bowman, and then retreated 7 inches back to my sidelines. And then he started bringing his berserkers with Brandon Hodor towards me. He blew up my Ranger trackers. So at that point, it was both of us down a ranged unit, and I was starting to feel pretty uncomfortable because those Ranger trackers are really important. I wanted to get them into combat with his outriders and kind of corral them in, but it didn't work. He swift advanced and blew them off the table. So at that point, I had no choice but to kill Half Hand, and I actually froze his berserkers, or his outriders, so that I could attack them with John and they couldn't retreat. And I extended and made a really kind of ballsy play. I took Ghost and he surged his berserkers forth behind my line. Well, my Sworn Brothers hadn't activated, but I didn't have a watcher on the wall to turn him around. And the maneuver zone was taken, or it wasn't taken. My NCUs were on the board, so I couldn't maneuver them and turn them around. So I had to do something to engage those berserkers. And then my plan to kill Half Hand would work. So I ran Ghost over Stakes, played Now His Watch Has Ended, and then I was able to charge my Sworn Brothers into his berserkers behind my line. Kind of a play that's pretty unexpected, but it ended up being huge because at that point, when I went first in the next round, I could take the swords and start working on these units because the Outriders can't do anything, and I've got to kill the berserkers, and then at that point, it's my two Sworn Brothers and two Conscripts versus Sworn Swords and Outriders that would presumably be almost dead. Two attacks from John's Sworn Brothers did not take out the Outriders. So at the end of the round, Khorne is dead. He's got the NCU advantage. And as I mentioned, he sudden charged, blew up the Conscripts, and then Ramsey's in my flank. So it was really dicey at the end. I managed to kill Ramsey, but it was 8-8, and he had Outriders that I can't catch. And he ended up having our blades are sharp. So he was one flank charge away from blowing up my Conscripts that were marked, or even Jon Snow's Sworn Brothers who were pretty critically injured. So, or the other Sworn Brothers who were pretty critically injured. I don't think I would have survived it. So I went ahead and took the Hail Mary, put Walder onto the Outriders, did a wound, and then the panic test. I needed it to do 4 wounds, and it did 4 wounds. So I ended up taking the table at that point. It was really, really dicey. So that's why Chris is giving me grief about it, because I didn't know that he had our blazer sharp, and we kind of rolled it up, and he surely would have killed those Sworn Brothers because of the extra 2 attack dice and the panic token. So pretty substantial, very close game. And then finally I played Bob. I wanted to run John in Feast for Crows, but I saw that he had an awful list with a scorpion with awful attachments. My Jon Snow list is just not equipped to deal with that many shots from a scorpion. So I went ahead and picked Othel because I knew that I had more combat drops than him, either list that he would choose. So I would have been able to put my crossbows in front of his scorpion. And I like the chances for my crossbows to get the jump on that scorpion and kill it. Then also his Alistar list had crossbows. And again, you know, even with Alistar's order to cancel a panic test, I just like the chances of Alistar's crossbows beating any ranged unit in the game. So I chose the Othel list. It's probably good that I did. He chose his Alistar list. It came down to Half Hand again. Half Hand was in both of my lists, so I used him all 4 games. I used his sacrifice in all 4 games. It's just huge. It's amazing. His ability giving some units more attacks early in the game and some speed is huge. And then his sacrifice ability late in the game is a game sealer. So I was able to get my bows in range of Alistar, and then I froze his bows with Khorne, and I was able to get 2 shots in a row off on Alistar's crossbows because I went first, so I took the swords. He did fail his Varus roll, which was really bad. He failed 3 out of the 4. The first one he passed, which blocked me from drawing cards, but the other 3, which were huge after that, he did fail, including the
he attempted to stop Craster so that he could one turn, two turn with Walder, but he missed the zone, so I was able to heal Ghost. Pretty big. That game came right down to the wire. Even after getting rid of Alistair, his Ghost managed to wipe out my trackers with two attacks. Both attacks hit from Ghost both times. I failed both defensive saves both times. I crit failed both panic tests. So out of two attacks, Ghost can do a maximum of 12 wounds. He did 12 wounds. So my Outriders, and it left his Rangers and his Ghost on the other side of the board unchecked. So it was pretty bad. I was really getting those Rangers in position to take Ghost out, but then Ghost just wrecked me. So, and then it kind of came down to my crossbows, my almost dead Rangers versus his almost dead Rangers and his conscripts. And my crossbows were completely out of position. I got a very lucky watcher on the wall late game. Normally I'm pretty unhappy if I don't draw that card early. It ended up being amazing that I drew both horns late in the game instead of early. And so I was able to pull watcher on the wall at a key moment, and I got my crossbows in range of his trackers. They were at 9 wounds and threatening my Ranger trackers, who were down to 3, I think. They would have died, but my crossbows were able to shoot into their flank with serrated enhancement. The vicious didn't end up mattering because he didn't fail the panic test, but I hit 6 out of the 7 shots, and he failed all 6. So I dropped him down to almost death, and at that point I was able to overtake his Rangers and win that game by a very narrow margin. It was 10-8, all things said. So I think my game with Chris was 11-8, 10-8 against Bob. I don't think there was really any game except for the John Mirror match where John scoring 2 points the whole game is going to skew the result of that game. But other than that, I think they were like 2-point wins, 2 and 3-point wins, very, very close games. So, again, stiff competition, a very strong club that they've got up there. And Night's Watch isn't – they're not underpowered by any means, but they're – they don't have super big advantages in the current meta. So it was really good to see 5 players and good to see all 5 Night's Watch players do pretty well. So definitely encouraging for things that mix up the meta and let you see some different stuff.
That's awesome. And then again, congratulations to all 3 of you guys, you know, first, second, and third. That's, you know, that's a pretty big deal with, you know, 20 different players. I wish I could have been able to go. My ride was unable to go at the last minute, and it just so happened that very night after dropping out for that reason, I ended up getting sick. Fortunately, it is not, you know, the really nasty thing. Went and got tested, and turns out it's just like a regular cold or something, but still better than, you know, spreading any of that around, you know, freaking people out. So, but maybe, you know, the next event would be awesome to be able to go to, or even, you know, the next Indianapolis event. So hopefully, you know, things start to kind of wind down, and I'd love to have a big event out here for you guys to be able to come out this way. So we'll kind of see how it goes. But kind of what you were saying, Brett, about half hand, you know, that ability is definitely amazing. I still stand by that point for point half hand NCU is by far the best NCU in the game. I obviously would say Mel is probably the best if you're just talking in general, but she's paying an extra point. I would say that half hand at only 4 points is better than Mel at 5. Just that ability to kill himself to shut off a unit, you're basically getting a similar, you know, somewhat similar effect as like Tywin, you know, because Tywin shutting off abilities and putting all the tokens, but, you know, half hand being able to influence all, you know, all game, and then at a clutch moment, you know, at the, you know, last round, especially in a tournament, you know what's going to be the last round probably, and you sacrifice them for to shut off some 10 point unit or just some key unit that's about to do something, and it's like game over. And definitely, in my opinion, the strongest NCU point for point. I usually don't leave home without him when I'm running a Night's Watch list. So it's actually pretty funny that, Amon used to be like a go-to. You couldn't ever see yourself not running Amon. And I actually see, I would say it's like 50-50 whether or not you even see him anymore, just because of how good the other NCUs are for Night's Watch, combined with the fact of all the really good neutral NCUs. But with that said, it sounds like you guys had an amazing time, and I am, I'm a bit jealous. I would have loved to been able to go run my Blackfish list. I had a Rob list set up, that was Rob and Sworn Swords, two other Sworn Swords and double Tully Cav. And then obviously my Blackfish list that I've mentioned 1,000 times on here. I definitely would have loved to give it a go. Sounds like, you guys had like an awesome group of players to, test your skills with. A lot of really tough opponents, and it was, hard fought, to get where you guys got for first, second, and third. With that said, we're going to go into our shout-outs. As always, guys, if you have a local shop, do your best to kind of, see what you can do to help them out, especially with everything going on. You never know. They might be kind of hurting for business, especially if they're not allowed to open yet. Try to contact them, see if they're doing delivery, or even just buy a gift card. It's like an investment into them. Buying, giving them money that you'll spend later once, they kind of open up. Or if they are open up, just see what you can do. Even if you're not really ready yet to kind of get out there, especially with the flu season kind of coming around, see if you can at least do like curbside pickup or, have it delivered straight to your house. Anything you can to help them, through this time, because when everything does kind of die down, you definitely want to have a place to go back to, get your games in. For those that don't really have a local shop, please consider Games Plus in Mount Prospect, Illinois. They're an amazing shop. Just recently, they helped us to get a Baratheon starter to give away for free to a guy who had, had his entire Baratheon faction stolen. Amazing shop. So if you want to, help out a shop in any way, definitely check them out online. They do deliver. Or you can, check out Family Time Games in Indianapolis, run by Shane. Amazing, amazing store owner. Does a lot for the community. So definitely go check out those two shops if you don't have something local near you and you're kind of already buying online anyways. Also check out A Song of Ice and Fire Guild.com. It's where a bunch of us content creators all have collaborated together to throw our content in one easy place to find us. On that site, you can kind of find a little bit of everything. You can find podcasts, you can find battle reports, articles, a bunch of different tools for army building, and that's where you can also find A Song of Ice and Fire stats.com, another site that I highly recommend going to. If you don't know about it already, go there and make a profile. Takes only a second, and then anytime you play a game, you can submit your results to that site to add to the, the data. And the more data we have, the more stronger, the data becomes, and we can kind of figure out how strong things are playing, how well certain commanders, factions are doing. And if you want, you can even keep track of your own like personal, how you're doing on a personal level, with your like win-loss against certain factions and commanders. Keeps track of all that stuff. Amazing place to go, and it only takes about 30 seconds, to punch in a couple results. So If you're running weekly or, sorry, probably not weekly, but monthly tournaments as locals, you can definitely use that software as well to input your data there, you know, for your tournament. The only thing with that is make sure that everyone is already has a profile and signed up. You want to kind of do it in advance so it's not kind of taking up way too much time. That's kind of what they did for this tournament. Winter is coming in Ohio. Everyone signed up preemptively on Song of Ice Fire stats. That way they could submit all their results there, and that's how we actually have all the awesome data that we were able to provide today. So if you kind of want to see how that all pans out, definitely consider using them for your tournament software. And then, yeah, with that said, definitely check us out on Facebook. You can like, share, and follow us either on Facebook or Blog Talk Radio. You can find us on, obviously, Song of Ice and Fire, as well as those that can't make our live show every Tuesday at 8 p.m. We are on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Also, if there's, you know, any other platform that we are not on that you would like to kind of see us on, go ahead and suggest that to us. And we'd love to mirror our content onto there. You know, we're not really, you know, it's not a huge deal for us to get all of our views in one area. You know, whatever's kind of convenient to use, you know, we're more than glad to kind of try to help you out if it means it'll help you listen to our show. And you can also check us out on Discord. On Discord, we kind of mostly just talk about, you know, show suggestions. You know, it's never a bad idea to have a huge list of potential shows. That way we're never kind of rushing to do a last minute show, you know, trying to just gather some random topic together because we don't, you know, we ran out of ideas. Because of you guys, we actually are scheduled all the way through to like February. And that's awesome to know that we don't have to like worry about, you know, show topics, especially when we do the show every week. But we switch shows around a bit, so don't worry if you suggest a show and we think it's really good. We'll definitely move things around and probably get in there a bit quicker than, you know, obviously March. So also, if you're listening to this, definitely try to check us out live. If you call in, we definitely like to try to get our callers to ask questions, kind of like Chris was tonight. I didn't even realize it was Chris until I screened him and he said it was him. But, you know, for the callers, there's always a chance that you could win either a unit box, a sleeve of card sleeves, you know, just by simply calling in and kind of asking a question either to the host or the guests. So definitely consider that. With that said, thank you guys for coming on, you know, helping us do the show. It was awesome to hear your insights on kind of your matchups and how things were kind of panning out and how well you guys did, especially, you know, a couple of you guys faced each other and sounds like you guys had a blast. Brett, was there anything you kind of wanted to add at the end of there?
No, honestly, I would just say check out Gamers Haven. That's where this event was, run by a very, very, very awesome gentleman. It was a super big pleasure. I think Gavin, Murray, and Joe would agree. Very kind. He baked us a whole big old tray of cookies and everything. So it was great. I'm sure that he, like other retails, has the ability to purchase things online. I did note that his A Song of Ice and Fire stuff was actually about 25% off of current MSRP, just right off of his shelf. So if that's a little bit of a hindrance, he was selling unit boxes for $30 and the starters were $90, and I believe he had every starter box. So definitely go check them out. Give them a ring. I guarantee he'd be willing to ship to you. So if you've got the opportunity to do that, do it, because we are eternally grateful for what he did for us this weekend.
Awesome. Yeah. And like I said, I wish I was able to go. I talked with a bunch of the guys over there trying to schedule, you know, getting out there, and they were definitely, you know, awesome and understanding guys. And, I can't wait for the next event and try to make it to that one. Hopefully, you know, things be a bit easier and find a bunch more people to kind of carpool with, because it's not too bad of a drive. I think it's like 6 hours for me. So I'm used to more like 8-12 hours for some of the other games I've played in the past. So I definitely wouldn't mind trying to make it out there for the next one. Again, thank you guys for coming on as our guests. You know, we appreciate you guys taking the time. You know, we can't really, it kind of gets boring when you just kind of hear us, you know, the hosts talk over and over again week to week. So we really appreciate all of our guests that come on. Thank you so much, guys. And until next week, same time as always, 8 p.m. Every week we do the show live. This is the Small Council, and it is dismissed.